Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, we're going to examine what short, intense exercise can do to help reduce heart risk in teenagers, how vitamin D found to significantly reduce cancer, yet almost 90% of the world has suboptimal levels. We are concerned about oxidative stress, and we should be because it's a primary cause of disease and aging. Well, good news about what can make a difference, something you can eat. For those of you who've asked over the last year about thyroid conditions, I'm going to give you a little more in-depth understanding of the seven reasons your thyroid medication isn't working the way it should. Green Med Info and a lot more on health and healing. Today also, the nine most expensive medications in the world, all of this to increase the profits of Big Pharma. Now think of the people who have co-pays. The co-pay on these drugs could be more than what they earn in their salary in a year, hence bankruptcies or not being able to use the drugs even if they worked. That leads me to and that's from Larry Schwartz of Aldernet, and that leads me to a separate report on how much of Big Pharma's massive profits are used to influence politicians. Recently, I did a report on the difference between a 30-day supply of a single medication and the percentage of profit it makes. For example, you can buy one identical drug to what is sold in the United States from the same manufacturer in Egypt for approximately $700 for a month's supply. In the United States, it was $37,000. How's that happen? Well, it's the free market. They can charge whatever they want. There's no restraints by Congress. Why is that? They made sure of it by having their lobbyist, who later left Congress and went to work for the pharmaceutical company, one of them at $2 million a year, put that into a Medicare bill. So we're going to deal with that. Profit, exploiting the sicknesses for profits. From our environmental segment today, Exxon of agriculture wielding power to block real climate solutions, a special report. What this means in lay language is that there's a movement to get back to organic farming in Africa, and it works. However, Big Agri is coming in and saying no, and they're polluting the soil and the water, and they have the control because they have bought into the model in there, meaning the political model. They control the companies, the countries of politicians. Also from John Whitehead, we are the government, tactics for taking down the police state. And also from Chris Hedges, how the brutalized become brutal, from Truth Dig. Let's get started. We know we should be exercising, but a lot of youth are not exercising. That's unfortunate. They could benefit tremendously if they did. Here is the latest on this from the University of Exeter in the United Kingdom. Quote, adolescents who perform just 8 to 10 minutes of high-intensity interval exercise 3 times a week could significantly reduce their risk of developing heart conditions. That's right. Now, just listen again to what I'm saying. Performing just 10 minutes of high-intensity interval, like, you know, racing, running, for just 3 times a week can significantly reduce heart problems, and that's important. Even apparently healthy teenagers showed significant improvements in markers, which are indicators of cardiovascular health. And so my suggestion is that we should have our youth exercising every day and just take them out biking, jogging. And when you're doing that jogging, do short little bursts of energy work, meaning speed work, 100 yards. Just let it out, go as fast as you can. That'll make a difference. But unfortunately, you'd think that, well, all of us who grew up as baby boomers, we were outside, we played, we ran, we had breaks in school, we had recess, we'd run around and do all the things kids normally and should be expected to do. We climbed trees. We had bicycles. If you were a paper boy like I was and many others, you cut grass, you earned enough to buy a bike. Might take 3 or 4 years to buy a Schwinn, but you could buy a Rally. And we were leaner and healthier. Today, that same kid is likely to spend most of their time in front of a computer or television or being driven someplace. They're just not exercising, and it's making an impact on their health. Vitamin D is the sunshine vitamin. There are thousands of studies on it. What we have to do is understand how important it is. It helps prevent cancer. It helps prevent heart disease. It helps prevent dementia. We're just not getting enough of it. We need more of it. Here's the latest on this from Prevent Disease, published in Cancer Causes and Control. Quote, "There's no doubting the magnitude of scientific evidence showing that the active form of vitamin D shuts down cancer cells. Higher levels of vitamin D are highly correlated with better chances of cancer survival, and a new meta, that means multiple studies, analysis of existing data shows that increasing vitamin D is associated with significantly reducing the risk of developing lung cancer. Quote, almost every disease decreases in frequency and duration as we move towards equatorial populations, meaning they're getting more sun, they're outside. And the data shows that there is a minimum of 1,000% increase for many diseases in countries furthest from the equator, meaning if you're in cold climates, Scandinavian climates, certainly in North American climates, especially during the winter, you're not out in the sun. Sometimes you don't get real sunlight for months. That increases by as much as 1,000% minimally your chance of getting lung cancer. So the takeaway message is get your vitamin D every day and your chance of lung cancer diminish substantially. Now, if you're exercising also, that's good as well. And mentioning lung cancer, I just spoke with Eutrice Leed. For those of you who don't know her, she's a well-known civil rights activist, community organizer, and has been a major voice within the African-American community, such as Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, Manhattan, for decades. And she is supposed to be passed. She was given a death sentence after one of the leading cancer hospitals opened her up. The oncologist took a look, closed her back up, and said that she should, quote, go home and make herself comfortable. There was nothing medicine could do. They gave her one medicine to take that could help reduce some of the pain or swelling. She had ovarian cancer metastasize to her lungs, and they were stage 4D, which is, it's over. That's when she called me from the hospital. And she said, they opened me up, they closed me up, what can we do? So I immediately, within 3 days, put her on a protocol. She has stuck to it 100%. As of her latest set of studies, they're very excited. Why? Because as of this morning, her oncologist said, this is remarkable. All of the tumor around your uterus is gone. There is still cancer in the epithelium and endometrium, but there's no metastasis, there's no cancer outside of that. So that means that it's been encapsulated, it's no longer metastasis, and they think it's because of the drug that she was given. Now what she has done, she has kept the drug and its receipt unopened in a box so that at some time, hopefully in the near future, she'll be able to say when there's no more cancer and they take credit for the drug, and she'll hand them all the packages of drugs and say, because she gets it refilled every month, I never used the drug. And maybe they might be interested in what she did. But also, she is breathing better. She's had no problems of blood in her sputum, nothing. But now the originating cancer wasn't the lung. The originating cancer was in the uterus. And once that starts, it can go to the liver. It can go to every system in the body, including the brain, by the way. Women who have cancer, uterine cancer, are far more likely to develop brain cancer. So now, lo and behold, no cancer outside of its encapsulation. So that's good. And this afternoon, she's getting her lungs re-examined with new MRIs, and I'll have that information, and I'll bring her on to talk about it. So that's why, and by the way, she's getting a lot of vitamin D and a lot of other nutrients. So get your vitamin D to help with lung cancer prevention. We know that we should be taking our antioxidants. I have suggested that eating a good diet, eating a great diet, is what we should be doing, but even that, in the world we live in, the stress we're under, the demands of our body, the amount of oxidative stress is not enough to compensate. Therefore, I recommend that we supplement antioxidants approximately 6 times a day in graduating amounts, meaning you start at a lower level, let's say 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, and then the next time, after maybe 2 weeks to a month, you go up to 1,500, then 2,000. You graduate on the nutrients going into the body. And that way the body is able to use it. Now, when you can take some simple but very revealing tests, you can see the oxidative stress in your body. For example, if you're under stress, your body burns through vitamin C real fast. I've actually seen people get 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenous because they had end-stage cancer or advanced AIDS. And 3 hours later, you couldn't find any in their blood. That's how much their body was using. So this idea, oh, we don't need a lot. Yes, we do. These people, unfortunately, have not had the clinical experience that those of us in the field have with tens of thousands of people to see. The more stress you're under, the more disease you have in your body, the more vitamin C. That's just one antioxidant. But let us not also forget the vegetables, because the phytonutrients in the vegetables also help with this. And here's the latest on this, and I'll just share this with you. It says they did an 18,000 man and woman randomized study starting in 1988, and they received beta-carotene or no active ingredient as a placebo. They followed them for 10 years, and they found that beta-carotene, and by the way, that's what you're getting in so many vegetables, not just carrots, whole wide range, that those who had the beta-carotene did measurably better in all indices. So eat your fruits, eat your vegetables, get the phytonutrients, get the antioxidants, and help yourself live a longer life. Because the people that got the placebo, nope, it did not stop or eliminate the free radicals, did not protect the molecules in the cells or your tissues. And as a result, those other people had rapid cell death and even organ collapse, which can come from, like heart failure, from oxidative stress. Now, some of you have had thyroid problems. And a lot of you had thyroid problems, but didn't notice until after menopause. When you started gaining a lot of weight, you were fatigued, your eyebrows started to thin out. That's one of the first signs of a thyroid problem. Thinning of the outside of the eyebrow and thinning of the hairline. Also, where your fingernails and toenails begin to get little flakes and crack easily. And they're thinner. Your fingernails and toenails should be hard, clear and pink, and no ridges. They should be smooth. Look at most people's fingernails and toenails. You'll see that's not the case. Also, you'll see little tiny veins in the feet and around the ankles, purple veins, little tiny ones. That's frequently from oxidative stress. And so you should examine your body carefully. But fatigue is one of the biggest things. Fatigue and weight gain. This is from Green Med Info, and I thought it was of value to share it to you. when you are first diagnosed, quote, with a thyroid condition, a prescription for medication becomes much like a prescription for hope. There is hope that you and your body will once again work together as partners, that you can feel normal again, at least someday, soon. There is a butterfly in the belly kind of optimism that all will be well again. But more often than not, it is not. And then it happens. You grow frustrated as you and your doctor struggle to find the right dosage and the right type of thyroid medication. You slowly realize that your thyroid medication doesn't do all you thought it would. It does some of the symptoms directly help, but not all. So why? What's going on? Well, medication rarely addresses the root cause of disease, especially thyroid and autoimmune conditions. It's kind of like putting a Band-Aid on. Well, an autoimmune condition. The escalating hopelessness is so frustrating that it can add to the stress and the strain that comes with the physical symptoms, the lethargy, the hollowness of your disease. Rethinking your doctor's orders. Knowing why your medication isn't working is a big step towards feeling better. And taking your health into your own hands to reverse your condition can bring hope back. If you're worried about your thyroid medication, then listen carefully. And by the way, one of the things I suggest for everyone with thyroid condition is making sure that they get one full serving, that's a cup. A cup is a serving. One serving of sea vegetables per day. Today, you have at least 40 to 50 different types of sea vegetables. Now, the most economical way of buying them is going down to Chinatown. They will have it in bulk, and you save a lot of money. You simply have to wash it, generally three times. You wash and rinse, wash and rinse, wash and rinse. Then you cook it. Then you can either use it hot or cold. One, if you have undiagnosed Hashimoto's disease, it's the number one cause of thyroid problems. So that's number one. And make sure your doctor checks you on this. If your doctor refuses to test your antibodies, you can test them yourself through directlabs.com, which is fairly affordable. Number two, you have lowered thyroid receptor sensitivity, meaning when your body is suffering from inflammation, and inflammation is going to come if you drink any alcohol, smoke at all. Marijuana is 117 times more carcinogenic than cigarettes. So be aware of that. And then medications cause inflammation, especially antipsychotic medications and a lot of the antacid medications. Also, all of your fried food, every fried food, carbonated soft beverages, sugar, all cause inflammation. So that's how you get your cells inflamed. It can dull the sensitivity of receptors on cell membranes that transfer thyroid hormone for the cells to use. And it can also reduce the number of those receptors overall. And when the receptor sensitivity is dulled, the body must make more and more hormone for the body to recognize and use it. Number three, you have poor thyroid hormone conversion. Your body must convert T4 to T3 to help give you energy in your cells. There are many factors to why your body may not be converting your thyroid hormone properly. If your body is not converting these hormones right, you'll have to take a higher dosage in order to convert enough for your body to benefit. Number four, you have high reverse T3 levels. Too little T3 is not good, but neither is too much. When your body is really stressed out, you can produce high levels of reverse T3, which is the opposite of active T3. It can't be converted to T3, but it isn't a thyroid deficiency. Number five, you've stressed brain-thyroid communications, meaning your thyroid does not work alone. Your brain has to tell it what to do, but stress, inflammation, anxiety, and autoimmune responses can put static on the line between the brain and the thyroid. What do you do there? Meditation, de-stressing, being in nature, being around animals, all help allow that reconnection between your brain and your thyroid. Taking a nice warm Epsom salts bath with soothing music on, put a candle on, put some aromatherapy in the tub, preferably the best aromatherapy for de-stressing. Well, there's lilac, which is terrific, and sandalwood is good, but also mint helps. Then you have a selenium deficiency that almost no doctor looks for. Selenium is essential as a micronutrient for your thyroid hormone conversion. And while selenium deficiency in adults occurs, no one ever looks for it. So make sure you're getting 200 micrograms, MCG, of selenium a day. And also something your doctor does not know about, and you can educate them. Your medication may contain gluten. Yes. It's probably not something you would think about, but yes, it's a dirty little secret that some thyroid medications do contain gluten and other cross-reactive ingredients like corn and dairy. Now, as this audience certainly knows, for people with an autoimmune condition, gluten can become a vicious problem. Medications containing gluten can cause your headaches, fatigue, congestion, and other symptoms, or make it bloating and gas. And so make sure you check your prescription medications. It won't be under active ingredient. It would be under what they consider inert, but it's not inert, or other ingredients. Now, those are just seven reasons for related various inflammation, autoimmune disorders, including thyroid dysfunction. And exercising helps the thyroid. De-stressing, meditation, yoga, all are good for thyroid. In fact, drinking green tea has been able to show help the thyroid. And having vegetable juices also help the thyroid. And helping with seaweed, as getting at least one serving of seaweed a day. If you want to read what is considered the definitive article in lay language on the thyroid, it's on my website. It was written with Dr. Martin Feldman and myself, and I try to keep all my articles updated. And I have written over 723 articles, so it's up there. Read it and help yourself on that. Now, I want to talk for a few moments about pharmaceutical drugs. If you have not watched the documentary, The War on Health, please do. It is an eye-opener. In fact, at any given time in the last 3 years, it has had the highest search results of any film in the world that I could find on Google Analytics. Sometimes, some days, 300 to 400 million search results. And it takes up almost every space in multiple pages. One day I found 18 pages in a row where it was in every place, which meant that a lot of those, if not the majority of those search results, were dealing with something about the film. And so people are paying attention, and they should, because the pharmaceutical industry, in cooperation with your doctor, is the number one cause of preventable death in the United States. This is the latest. This is from Natural Society. Why are older people taking as many as 30 big pharma drugs? Quote, seniors represent only 13% of the population, but they take over 40% of pharmaceutical drugs in the United States. In the United Kingdom, 45% of prescriptions are doled out to individuals over the age of 65. The practice of polypharmacy has never been more acute than it is in modern era. So why are we drugging the elderly so profoundly? With such a high number of the elderly taking multiple drugs, there have been few studies looking at how these drugs interact with one another. This is even more alarming in those over 65 because an older person metabolizes chemicals differently, with the chances of an adverse reaction to any one prescription drug rising to a reported 20%. Now, in an article presented in the Daily Mail, the tale of an 85-year-old woman staying in a nursing home would make the most stalwart among us shiver. for disguising the real drugs and then seeing the impact on this woman. This is what it says. Quote, this is from the chief executive of the campaign on this, Gary Fitzgerald. Old people can be difficult. They might complain about the food or something else, and it's so easy just to dope them up and keep them quiet in a corner. These drugs can endanger the lives of elderly people. The problem is if someone who is old suddenly deteriorates and dies, it is regarded as quite natural, one of those things that happen. A post-mortem is not usually carried out, and the relatives are grieving too deeply to be suspicious that anything is remiss. It is weeks or months later when they are thinking about it more clearly and they realize there was something not quite right. And then it goes into it. And so just how badly are we drugging the elderly and why? It isn't just pain medication or high blood pressure medication that are keeping our seniors overly drugged. It is a recent study that looked at over 100,000 doctor visits among those over 65 years of age. Doctors alarmingly prescribe psychotropic drugs almost twice as often as they do for younger patients. Psychiatric drugs for depression, anxiety, and other mental health conditions were prescribed to elderly patients when arguably they often could have just used a few sessions of counseling and no drugs, or a visit from family and friends in their extended care or nursing homes. The elderly population is booming, and seniors use the healthcare system more than any other demographic. So finding safe, effective, and appropriate treatments for their mental health problem is critical for the well-being of a large number of people as a policy matter. In other words, the elderly are a perfect target for the pharmaceutical industry. They represent the easiest money made for an industry who arguably cares little about a person's true well-being, end quote. Now, I want to segue from that into this report. There's two. They're short. One is from Truthout, from Mike Ludwig. Quote, how much of Big Pharma's massive profits are used to influence politicians? And then he says here, well, when you challenge Big Pharma, they say, oh, we put it into research. And some people believe that. Very little goes into research. It all goes into profits, and they mark off everything. So when one of those people are getting $20 million a year in salary, plus black American Express cards that have no limit, private jets, all that is deductible as an operating expense, which means that you and I are paying for that if we happen to use that particular medication. But then they spend, quote, Big Pharma spends millions on political contributions. And here in one case, they spent $51 million in one year, $32 million in another year. And they frequently do it through front groups. And they're spending a lot, thus far $10 million on Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And Bigger Pharma tends to spend more on Republicans than Democrats, but it's not a whole lot more. 58% versus 42%. And then, perhaps unsurprisingly, a group of 18 House Democrats, not Republicans, who are demanding that the CEO of Valeant Pharmaceuticals, Michael Pearson, join Scully in front of the House Oversight Committee during the first week of October to answer questions about recent price hikes. By the time this article is published, then it goes on to talk about how all this becomes of no consequence. For every dollar, quote, the industry spent, pharmaceutical industry spent on contributions during the last election cycle, $7 was spent on lobbying. And they spend billions lobbying. So that's where a lot of the profits go, to lobbying so they can control the legislation, which means they can control the oversight committees of the FDA and the CDC, which means they can control the outcome of drugs being tested. They control how much money goes to universities and control the outcome of those studies. Let me explain it this way. You're a big pharmaceutical company. You give $20 million to a major university. You have to give it to a particular department, and you chair that department, and you give it as a grant, but the person there doesn't control anything. They get the money, their name and prestige go in the article. But the pharmaceutical company has its own in-house paid-for scientists that design the study. You carry it out, but you can't review anything. If the study is bad and has no good outcome, you can't mention it. You've been paid. You've got to keep your mouth shut. You pay to play. But let's say that they can mix the results in such a way that it gives some slight outcome improvement. Well, then it suddenly becomes a new miracle drug, and it gets boosted into the mindset on advertising, and we start to use it. The entire industry is rigged. The game is rigged at every level. So don't expect any reform in nursing homes, assisted living centers, in hospitals, nothing. Let me repeat this very specifically. Nothing will change. It can't. Because the people in control will not allow change. Nobody in power ever surrenders power. Because their power represents profits. So no one's going to surrender profits to be more ethical. Now, how bad is it? This is from Alternet, Larry Schwartz. They took a look at the prices of the 9 most expensive medicines in the world. Now, this is what one person pays per year. One person. Myozim, $300,000 per year. All right, that's one drug. We have Acthar, $300,000 per year. Folitin, $320,000 per year. Synergy, $350,000 per year. Naglazine, $365,000 per year. Elaprase, $375,000 per year. Vimizin, $380,000 per year. Soliris, $440,000 per year. That's for one drug, for 1 year, for one patient. And then this one, Glybera, $1,210,000 per person per year. $1,210,000. Now, here's what's remarkable. Most of these drugs, if you look at the actual science behind them, are not miracle drugs. They're just extraordinarily profitable. And we can spend nothing, not a nickel in the United States, on prevention. My thoughts on this are simple. I believe that we must have, outside of the existing framework of government, because it will never be moved from the inside, I believe that we must start at the citizen level, in small support groups, in schools where we have small coalitions of school teachers or parents working together, and start a preventative program and educate people on the role of prevention so we don't end up needing a drug. Whether that drug actually works or saves our lives or not is secondary. We need to prevent these conditions. Right now, there is no system in the United States to allow the existing corruption or lack of ethics and the massive commodification and commercialization to be challenged. None. So that's what I would suggest. Also, it is my goal in the near future to at least establish one holistic assisted living center somewhere in the United States or the world, and to show that a person who is sick but not incapacitated, meaning they can still take care of themselves, but they live in a building with all the other people, and they have their own private apartment, and they generally take their meals downstairs, and there's a attending nurse, but no physicians unless they're called. And these people then stay there before going into a nursing home. And there are thousands of these assisted living centers in the United States, and they're extraordinarily profitable. At the low end, you're looking at $3,000. I've seen some as high as $20,000 a month at the high end. What would I do that would be different to set a model that would hopefully inspire others to change the whole system, a paradigm shift. First, you have a holistic medical facility inside the home where people get therapy such as intravenous therapy, ozone therapy, hyperbaric oxygen, psychotherapy, a holistic psychotherapy, acupuncture, acupressure, chiropractic, a gym where they're taught classes, a track where they can power walk, a pool where they can swim and do aerobics, putting in organic gardens, having them tend to gardens, bringing someone in to teach classes, language classes, musical instruments classes, have weekly concerts in there, stimulate the mind to become active again. And so a person, even having only organic food, juicing all day long, because I've seen what that kind of protocol has done for millions, if not tens of millions of people in my career, where the feedback has come that major changes happen, major results occur. Little change, little outcome. Big change, major outcome. And we just don't have any such place. It does not exist on the planet, but that's my goal. Let's see if I'm able to open one of those up someplace, get some results, because my goal would be to have people going and a year later leaving to go back home, not to go to a nursing home or die. In other words, reversing their disease, reversing their aging, giving people back quality of life where otherwise they would think at their end of a useful life. So let's see what happens. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Find a wheel and it goes round, round, round as it skims along with the happy sound as it goes. Along the ground, 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 till it leads you to the one you love. Then your love will hold you round, 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 in your heart's a song with a brand new sound. And your head goes spinning round, 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 'cause you found what you've been dreaming of. In the night you see the oval moon going round and round in tune, and the ball of sun in the day makes a girl and boy wanna say, find the ring,
find the ring,
and put it round, 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 and with ties so strong, the two hearts are bound, put it on. The one you found, 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 for you know that this is really love. Find a wheel, and it goes round, round, round as it skims along with a happy sound as it goes along the ground, ground, ground till it leads you to the one you love.
I'd like to welcome you all. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take on some issues, and I'd like to play some clips now, short clips. Do you remember when we were told by all the leading experts at the CDC, at the World Health Organization, the FDA, even from the White House and Gerald Ford, that we all had to get vaccinated, no one would be exception because we had this pandemic? Turns out they were all wrong. Oh, except one person. This one person is a remarkable human being, one of the most knowledgeable physicians in the world on vitamin C. And he's from Australia. And his name is Dr. Kallikakorinos. Here's what he had to say when interviewed about the swine vaccine. Now, I'm sharing this with you so you can understand people wanting to panic you into the vaccines today are just as inaccurate, just as wrong. So those doctors like Dr. Ken Stoller, medical doctor, who says, why are you vaccinating your child with a hepatitis B vaccine? The mother's hepatitis negative. The child's hepatitis negative. The child doesn't have antibodies. You're putting a toxin in there? Why are you doing that? And no one questions it. Some do. He was the only medical doctor I knew who questioned the swine flu vaccine.
President Ford was going to vaccinate the entire population of America, every man, woman, and child, black, white, and brindle, against a particular type of flu called swine flu. because he'd been advised that there was going to be a huge epidemic that would kill thousands of people. Now, I spoke out against it. The newspapers got hold of it. And eventually, I appeared on Kathy Cosby's television program. And I specifically said that many people would drop dead after receiving the vaccines, particularly if they had a heart problem or a potential heart problem. Now, there was someone in New York watching the program who didn't like a gentleman called Gambino. Gambino is about 70 years old, the mafia boss. He thought, now, this is a great idea. So he got someone to persuade Gambino to have his flu shot, and Gambino promptly dropped dead. And the newspaper headings at the time actually said, Mafia flu jab conspiracy. Now, people were dropping dead in the buildings where they received their shots. Many others became paralyzed. And the whole program ground to a halt. Now, the important thing, really, is that I was the only physician anywhere in the world who warned about these side effects. And this is very important because I'm just an ordinary medical practitioner without specialist qualifications. I wasn't even an American. And yet, I was the only one. Everybody else spoke out in favor of this campaign. And it's very, very obvious that everybody else was wrong and only one was right. The whole program ground to a halt. There wasn't even a single case of swine flu. There was never an epidemic of swine flu. And why it was that the world's most powerful man with the world's most powerful Department of Health got it so wrong, we will never know. But it's important to realize that he did get it wrong and that the authorities did get it wrong.
And he is correct. You wouldn't have learned anything from history, however, if you were a pro-vaccine person. Now, I am listening to many unions now supporting Hillary Clinton. I challenge them. I welcome them to come on this program and to debate me on their support of Hillary Clinton. And maybe they forgot that she supported NAFTA. Maybe they forgot that she was on the board for 6 years of Walmart. And we all know Walmart's history in dealing with unions or fair labor. But if you've forgotten and you have some other agenda, just be honest about it. Here's what Brian Ross of ABC Network News found out about Hillary Clinton that you should all know.
But first, never before seen video of Hillary Clinton inside the Walmart empire. She is probably one of the most investigated politicians in American history. And this morning, you're going to see her in a way you've never seen her before, serving on the board of Walmart. ABC News chief investigative correspondent Brian Ross is here with details on this. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Robin. Although she makes no mention of it in her official biography, Hillary Clinton served for 6 years on the board of Walmart, the huge retailer criticized by many for its treatment of workers and its strident opposition to unions. Just how strident can be seen in videotapes ABC News has obtained from the archives of a production company hired by Walmart to record its meetings, now providing a rare clips inside the company and a very corporate Hillary Clinton. Walmart's opposition to unions was led for decades by labor lawyer John Tate, who, after his retirement, proudly recalled at this company meeting in 2004 what he said was his favorite phrase.
Labor unions are nothing but blood-sucking parasites living off of the productive labor of people who work for a living.
Hillary Clinton was not present at this Walmart meeting, but Tate was relied on for years to keep unions out at Walmart, including during the 6 years from 1986 to 92, when Clinton was on the Walmart board and Tate was either an executive or a member of the board himself. But nowhere on the tapes of the four stockholder meetings Clinton attended during that time did we find any indication she spoke up to defend the role of America's labor unions. And another board member says, nor did she do so in any of the 24 smaller board meetings held during her service. Clinton has since denounced Walmart policies. But at this 1990 stockholders meeting, she seemed to be very much the loyal company woman.
You know, as a shareholder and director of our company, I'm always proud of Walmart and what we do and the way we do it better than anybody else.
But 20 years later, critics say Walmart still lags in promoting women to top jobs. And the company is now defending itself in a discrimination lawsuit brought by 1.5 million current and former female employees.
I don't doubt the sincerity of her efforts, but we don't see a lot of evidence that conditions for women at Walmart changed much during the late 1980s or early 1990s.
As the wife of the then governor of Arkansas, Clinton also took a role in supporting a Buy America program to create American jobs.
One of the reasons we want to buy America is because we love America.
But as I reported at the time for NBC News in 1992, Walmart continued to get most of its products from overseas during its Buy America program, including from this factory in Bangladesh that used 11 and 12-year-old girls. Some of the foreign-made clothing was later found to be sold under Made in America signs in Walmart stores.
Made in Korea, made in China.
All at a time that Hillary Clinton served on the Walmart board. Clinton now says she did not know about the foreign sweatshops of children or how the Made in the USA campaign was being run. And as a candidate for president, Clinton, endorsed by more than a dozen unions, has sought to distance herself from Walmart, saying she no longer agrees with its principles and values and now believes that Walmart workers should be able to unionize, Rob.
We'll see if it comes up again in tonight's debate.
It may well. It's a major issue.
Sure. She didn't know. Of course she didn't know. She doesn't know anything. If someone's so misinformed, why should we even consider them legitimate in any position? It's just staggering that the Democrats would even consider someone of that caliber, that level of complicity. Remember, it was her and her husband who chose not to stop the genocide in Rwanda, who were responsible for the Balkanization of that whole area of Yugoslavia and Croatia. But most importantly, it was Hillary Clinton personally and her husband who told Madeleine Albright not to intervene and to allow the children of Iraq, 500,000, to die. And if you doubt me, or think it's being overstated, watch the 60 Minutes clip with Leslie Stahl when she said, is it worth it, this campaign of sanctions, to have 500,000 children die? And Madeleine Albright said, yeah, it's worth it. And just add that to the resume. So it's just never ceased to amaze me, a country that claims that we should look for the most exceptional people, and we end up getting the worst human beings ever for the most powerful positions. Says a lot about us. Now, finally, I want to play a little clip here from a member of Parliament, the UK's Parliament, Tony Burn, explaining history of chemical weapons wars and the crimes of those. And the fact that Donald Rumsfeld sold chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein, which he used then against Iran. And it's rare to have a politician anywhere stand up and make statements that are historically correct where the public is made aware of it. So I just want you to know that there are people speaking the truth.
...of ministerial responsibility on a matter of public policy. Now, of course, we've discussed so much the conduct of ministers, we've somewhat forgotten that this whole story is part of a very unhappy record of British relations in the Middle East, which my honourable friend is going to raise again on Friday. Iraq was part of the world we took over when the Ottoman Empire disappeared. Britain bombed Iraq with chemical weapons in the 1920s, and a few months ago, the Queen Mother put up a statue to the man who did it. Bomber Harris was the squadron leader who used chemical weapons against Iraq. We planned to occupy Kuwait in 1958, and it all came out with the papers when Selwyn Lloyd wrote to Foster Dulles and said, we might take over Kuwait as a crown colony. and the double standards of British policy in the Middle East is the thing that will be noticed by anyone in the Arab world who reads this debate. We didn't take the view we did about Kuwait when Turkey invaded Cyprus, when the occupied territories were taken over by Israel. This Gulf War, looked at in the light of what we now know, was a war for profit, a war for oil, and a war for the control of the area. And now we are suddenly told that ministers who protested so vigorously about their defense of democracy and human rights were selling weapons to Saddam Hussein, who was repressing Kurds and Shiites before and after the war, and then saying it was just a question of flexible guidelines. 200,000 Iraqis were killed last year by forces, including our own. 150,000 Iraqi babies under five were expected to die by the Harvard medical team that looked at the bombing of the water supply by British, American and French bombers. And it is an act of odious hypocrisy then to come along, as honourable members have said, and say, but of course our industry needs the orders. People want the jobs. You remember the joke about the man producing nuclear weapons in America, and somebody said, how could you do it? And he said, well, a man's got to live, hasn't he? And that is the argument, that somehow you can justify the supply of weapons in that way. The international arms trade is a greater threat to world peace than the AIDS epidemic or the drugs trade, because it's supported by governments. It props up dictators, the Shah, Batista, Marcos, Papadoc, all these people, Pinochet, props them up, and they get the weapons to crush their own people in the interests of keeping down their own people so that the multinationals can make a profit from the superpowers that sell them the weapons. And then, because they bought the weapons, they get into trouble with the IMF, and the IMF comes along and says, cut your social budgets, because you've got to pay the debt on the arms you bought to keep down your own people. And, of course, the waste of skill. Some of the most brilliant scientists and engineers in the world are working on methods of death instead of the means of life. And billions and billions and billions of pounds are wasted on weapons that could have saved lives. And a heavy responsibility rests upon everybody, and I know every government to some extent has done it, who promotes the international arms trade. Because there have been 134 wars since 1945. Millions have died in them, using weapons that were supplied by the superpowers very often. And millions more died because they were denied the resources that were wasted in the arms program itself. Ministers will not tell the House the truth on this matter. Ministers use intelligence, and everybody knows it, we've had a reference to it, and are prepared to sacrifice intelligent people to conceal the truth. This is a matter the House should deal with by select committee. Look at Oliver North. They had him up before a congressional committee and they grilled him for weeks on Watergate. When Peter Wright wrote a book saying he'd committed treason, they spent millions of pounds trying to prevent the book getting into the hands of the British people. Because the central question is, who is allowed to buy the weapons? Who controls it? Who knows what happens? Who tells the truth? And finally, does the House take the responsibility for holding government accountable?
And why is this important? Because nowhere in any of the dialogue do I hear discussion of the weapons used by all fighting parties throughout the world. We are the number one suppliers of those weapons. And how does a country get weapons? There's only one place they can go, the State Department. And who has to sign off on all weapons sales to foreign countries? The Secretary of State. And who signed off on more weapons sales than the last two administrations combined? Hillary Clinton. So unless someone wants to completely change what it is to be a liberal Democrat, then maybe you ought to think twice about the power that you have given this person in the past and the passage of quality information that should be in the mainstream media simply never gets there. So just remember, you can't have wars without weapons. The weapon of propaganda, our mainstream media, and fascists, sorry, Fox News provides. But every one of the media, NBC, ABC, CNN, there's the little toads over there. I mean, I wouldn't even qualify them as a toad. They're so incompetent. I think they've got 13 people in a nursing home watching it still. This is what passes for media objectivity in America. It doesn't exist. and we get the worst of the worst people in positions of power with the most corrupt organizations, the most corrupt government, and a whole industry, the war machine, whose only purpose is profit. And death is the only outcome from the weapons that are sold. At least he had the courage to say it. Let's see if anyone in our Congress ever has that courage. I'll tell you one person who won't, Bernie Sanders. He is one of their biggest supporters. Joining me in studio in New York City is Lou Ann Panassi, holistic nurse. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. The past two Tuesday evenings, you had some historic broadcasts on your Progressive Commentary Hour, and I have been just taken back by the outpouring of response from it, and I would like to read one letter from someone who used to be a GM at Pacifica. A huge thank you for Summer, Utrice, and Tracy. They all cast a sharper light on the WBAI Pacifica situation. I agree that it has been made hopeless. I just hope the guilty get further exposure as the vandals they are. Although I was very much a part of it, I think Tracy is absolutely right about the damage inherent in sticking too close to the 1960s past. As for Utrice, what a horror story she has to tell. The use and sales of drugs at the station began with Frank Milspaugh.
Hold on. Do not mention any names.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I was extremely concerned, so I went to Pacifica and local BAI boards with it, emphasizing, as you have, the great risk of revoked licenses. The faces showed concern, but I think that was the extent of it. So they promised that they'd take it up with the national board, but the head of the national board died very unexpectedly soon after. Thank you again for streaming the truth that free speech radio so consistently shuns.
Well, it's only free speech if the people who are controlling the network or the station or the program directors are in alignment with your concept of free speech. Otherwise, you can have it curtailed. In 27 years on commercial radio, I was never censored once. I've been censored four times on WBAI, PFW, for just telling the truth. In fact, I spent over 11 months full-time trying to find the truth about what happened at Pacifica National that impacted all the local stations and the movement, what was called the coup counter-coup. And I finally interviewed over 400 people, including people going clear back to the beginning of Pacifica. I found some elderly people who were at the very, very beginning. I listened to the old archival tapes of Louis Hill. I listened and tried to see, could I see a evolutionary pattern in consciousness of Pacifica? And then I started to see that Pacifica's always had conflict, always had people who believed their own agenda was more important than what Pacifica's was. But at different times, they weren't dominant. So you had periods of peace, relatively speaking, periods of outstanding broadcasting and mixed with some junk broadcasting. And then you had mixing of some very progressive minds with some very non-progressive or regressive minds. And so we've never had what we would consider the best of the best. We've always had lapses. But where we are today is when I look back over this, and I was never allowed to give that broadcast. I started, and it was a 440-page report. I offered it to all the people involved with Pacifica. Not a single person wanted the copy. So when I went to do the broadcast, my mic was yanked out, and I was taken off right in the middle of giving the comment. So much for free speech. It doesn't exist unless someone allows you. So it is nothing but hypocritical. The current question is, can Pacifica survive? The answer is, absolutely it can survive if it recognizes its errors and changes. Will it do that? Absolutely not. Will BAI survive? Absolutely it could survive if you change everything, the programming, the management, the whole way it does its governance. Will that happen? Not humanly possible. So then what's the outcome? I believe the outcome is inevitable. I believe at this time you should start looking at a two-tier system. One tier of getting together all the outstanding community broadcasters, bring them together, and give them a forum over the Internet. Everybody can reach the Internet, or the vast majority of people can, And but BAI has got this belief, as does Pacifica, that the only people that count are people who can turn on a radio every day. That is not going to happen in the future. Already we're way past the point where we've started making a transition to the internet and to younger people. We have outstanding community programming. Outstanding. There's no other station I know of that does as good or local programming. Let BAI exist for local programming only and have all those people work together, and that has to be voluntary, but at least then you keep the voice alive without all the interference of politics at the national level or local board level. And then separately, those individuals who have syndicated shows then have a separate stream for shows that deal with non-local issues, with international issues. So you have two different channels you could listen to and therefore have a viable future.
What about taking back Democracy Now? That was a valuable asset.
It's too late. Can't be done.
People are asking a lot about that.
What I believe should happen is I believe that it is long past time that an independent group of outside professionals come in and examine everything that was done during this period of time which privatized Pacifica's assets, who was responsible, how did they do it, who worked with them on that. And even if nothing changes, at least now, finally, the left can no longer keep that hidden as one of its secrets. And then maybe nothing in the world will happen. Probably not. But at least the truth will happen. And the truth I have not seen explored or exposed thus far in all these years. Thank you, Luann. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Put your sweet lips a little closer.